Thank you. I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me and for organizing what's been a very interesting conference. Several people have made claims to be outliers. I'm not an outlier by my subject matter, but you can see that I am by the style of my slides. So I take my claim. What I want to talk about is a bottom-up view of adaptive dispersal, ideal free distributions, and related topics. And so the idea is to think about mechanisms behind dispersal patterns and then think about the implications of those mechanisms. This talk will have some redundancy for a lot of you, so please bear with me. I'm going to kind of recapitulate some history of the subject. So the questions that I'm interested in looking at are the ones that people are looking at. What strategies will you expect to see evolving if you have a dispersal in spatially heterogeneous, temporally constant environments? And how can those strategies be achieved? So basic ideas are look at evolutionary stability, which I think most people know about, but I'll say something about it anyway. And look at some spatially explicit models and try to see what those can do in terms of predicting the invasibility, or not, of different strategies. So the kind of models that I want to look at will, at least as a jumping off point, will be reaction diffusion or reaction diffusion advection models. But I'm going to do this in sort of a historical way. So the starting point for a lot of the things that I want to talk about is a paper by Hastings in 1983. He looked at models like this, where you have possibly a varying diffusion rate, but simple diffusion. I'll come back to what this means at the micro scale in a few minutes. Some type of growth, and a closed boundary. So the discrete version of that is something where you have movement from patch to patch according to some matrix, and the matrix is symmetric. So what this means is that, in effect, there is no directed movement where one patch is sending population to another patch. There's no flux in here, no advective flux here. There is just diffusion. So what did Hastings do? Well, he said, suppose you've got an equilibrium, stable, think of it as a resident population. Assume that you've got a small invading population that doesn't affect very much what's going on in terms of the density established by the resident population. So the invading population is influenced by the presence of the resident at equilibrium, but we ignore whatever effect the invader might have on the resident. So look at a model like this. And the conclusion would be that if V equals 0 as an equilibrium is stable, then you don't have invasibility. If it's unstable, then you do. I mentioned this partly just out of historical interest, but also because this is one of the approaches I'm going to use to assess invasibility and hence evolutionary stability. Because this is mathematically a significant feature of this equation is that it's a single equation, and that makes analysis much simpler. Okay, so what did Hastings do? The resident satisfies an equilibrium equation. If you look at the invader, you can linearize the model at V equals 0. You get an eigenvalue problem, a typical elliptic eigenvalue problem. It has a principal eigenvalue. The first eigenvalue has a positive eigenfunction. And you get invasion if that one's positive. And you don't get invasion if it's negative. This original equilibrium equation can be viewed as an eigenvalue problem as well. Because you can view as being positive, then think of the U here as being an eigenfunction, the U here as being an eigenfunction. Here, it's just setting up a formula for the weight. But suppose you have that situation, and the growth rate in the model is not constantly zero. It's non-zero someplace. And that means that your solution at equilibrium must be non-zero. And you can then compare eigenvalues for different diffusion rates by using the variational form for eigenvalues. So variational from the first equation for U, you can easily verify that 0 is equal to this quotient of integrals down at the bottom of the slide. But if little d is smaller than big D, this second quotient of integrals is going to be positive. That means that if I maximize that relative to all possible test functions, phi, I'll get something that's positive. And so the conclusion is, and there's strict inequality in this string of inequalities, that I'll get a positive eigenvalue for the principal eigenvalue, and that means that V can invade. So the implication of that is that if you have a lower dispersal rate than the resident, then you can invade when the resident's already established. Because that's similarly, if the inequality goes the other way, you can't. So just to put that up on the slide, if you have a positive, stable equilibrium of this single species model, and there's a mistake in slide number 4, there should be a U multiplying that first f of x u right there. And you have this feature that this growth rate term is not identically zero, then your resident can be invaded by a population that's using a dispersal strategy with a lower dispersal rate, diffusion rate. And so that could be interpreted as selection for slow dispersal. Because if you have a larger, if you have any positive dispersal rate, the larger dispersal rate can be invaded by something with a smaller one. So anything positive can't be evolutionarily stable. Now, a key element here is that if you integrate the equation for U, just integrate through the equation, what you find is that the integral of the local growth rate times the population density has to be equal to zero. That arises because of the no-flux boundary condition. And that means that if your growth rate's not identically zero, it has to change sign. So that means that in some cases, if you think of that as representing a fitness, it's going to be positive in some places, negative in others. And it's easy to interpret that in a logistic context. If you have growth minus equilibrium density, it's positive some places, negative other places. So what that means is that in this kind of situation, if you make the assumption that the population growth rate is not identically zero, then the equilibrium can't match resource availability. So that's a key idea behind why you can get invasibility by something that can perhaps match it more closely. And of course, if there's no dispersal at all, then you have a stable equilibrium for ODE, you'd match perfectly the resource availability. A little different approach, which again I mentioned partly for historical reasons, and partly because I plan to use this in some models. And mathematically, the distinction between the two is important, although I think ecologically it's probably not. Let's not just model the resident, but model both the resident and the invader. Think of them as being ecologically equivalent. So in terms of the impact they have on the resource, they do exactly the same thing. I've scaled carrying capacity to 1. All of what I'm talking about could be done with carrying capacity in there as well, but it complicates things, and so I've looked at typically simple cases where you just look at the varying growth rate. The conclusion, this model is done by Dockery et al. In 1998. Their conclusion was the same as Hastings. If you have a lower diffusion rate, then you're able to invade somebody with a higher diffusion rate. So you still get selection for slow dispersal. A couple things to notice. One thing is there's no advection in these models. Another thing is that the diffusion rate might vary, but it's of a physical type of diffusion based on Thick's law. And that microscale interpretation of what diffusion is turns out to be different than what you would get if you allow for behavioral aspects of dispersal at the microscale. Another comment is that this kind of model has no direct connection to foraging theory. It's sort of arbitrary. So unlike the situation that Mark was describing, there's no connection between the diffusion coefficient and the resource uptake. So those are all limitations, or at least features, of the models that were studied in Dockery et al. In this setup. Now, another important historical paper, and there are quite a few of them, but this one is specifically relevant to this notion of ideal free distributions and resource matching. This is work by McPeak and Holt, 92, and you have a setup where you have two populations and two patches, and they're again ecologically identical, but have different dispersal patterns. There's a discrete time model, different kind of model. And if there's no bias in dispersal, so you have the symmetric dispersal case, then again, the conclusion is that you have a selection for lower dispersal rates. But if you allow these to be different, and you require this balanced dispersal or ideal free condition on those dispersal rates, then you get strategies that are favored by selection. And a comment about what this means is it means that the carrying capacities that you had, which in this case are the things that are determining the equilibrium, are the same at equilibrium with or without dispersal. And the reason for mentioning that is because that's a key idea in the interpretation that I want to give for what ideal free dispersal means. There are a couple of different ways to think about it, and that's a way, or it's part of one way of thinking about it. So the hypothesis is that, in the things I want to talk about, is that dispersal strategies that are evolutionarily stable are those that allow organisms to match the spatial distribution of resources. Now, how they might try to do that is something that I can attempt to capture by using a reaction diffusion advection equation. So the kind of model that I want to look at will have diffusion, which might depend on location, it might depend on density, and it'll have advection, which might depend on location and density, and just simple logistic growth with variability in space. So what these ideas, the ideal free distribution, would suggest is that you should have equal fitness for organisms at places where you have organisms. So if you have a positive intrinsic growth rate everywhere, then your strategies that are stable should match that. If the growth rate is actually negative in some places, then you might want to have population zero in those places, match the positive part of the growth rate. Now, if that happens, in places where M and your equilibrium are positive at least, that should mean that the dispersal terms should give you a value of zero. Now, I think the correct interpretation of this is not to say that there isn't any dispersal, but to say that there's no net dispersal. That is to say, if you have organisms moving from one point to another, then you have other organisms that are moving back that maintain a constant profile with respect to this, although this could be a dynamic equilibrium. That's certainly not ruled out. So the key biological features that you get from this are constant fitness, namely zero, and no net movement at equilibrium. So in some sense, this is the abstraction of ideal free dispersal that I'm going to impose on some of the strategies that I want to think about. So this is the ideal free distribution. We've heard quite a bit about it. Individuals will move to equilibrate fitness because they'll move to optimize fitness. And so at equilibrium, there should be no net movement, although guys could trade places, and that would work just fine. So to rephrase the hypothesis is evolutionarily stable dispersal strategies are the ones that can produce ideal free distributions. And so part of what I want to talk about, and I'll start talking about this in just a moment, is to show that certain strategies are in fact evolutionarily stable if they can produce ideal free distributions. And when I say show, what I have in mind is write down mathematical theorems that have proofs. So this is all mathematical. There's no simulation here. It's a little different approach from some of the other approaches that we've seen. So two questions. One is, can you get ideal free dispersal? And the other is, I guess that's this one. The other one is, if you do, can you get evolutionarily stable strategies out of it? So thinking about a little more detail in the reaction-diffusion case, I actually have a couple of different thoughts about ideal free dispersal. One of them I would call dynamic, and the other one I would call equilibrium. And the dynamic idea for that, and I understand there's not the only way that you can achieve it, is to move up a gradient of fitness. So there, you're just trying to optimize fitness. So this is, in some sense, describing the dynamic process of going to the place where your fitness would be best. At equilibrium, the consequence is that fitness should be equilibrated, should be constant, and that implies that there is no net movement. Note that having constant fitness in this setup means that fitness has to be zero, and that directly contradicts the key assumption in the analysis by Hastings from 1983. So let me turn to mechanisms. What kind of strategies could be used to achieve an ideal free dispersal? Well, this is similar to, but slightly different from the slide that Mark put up a little while ago. Think about a one-dimensional random walk. I'm going to follow Kubo's book on diffusion from 1980. And I'm going to think about the places where jumps occur as not being the point x minus delta x, but the interval between x minus delta x and x. Then think about guys jumping to the interval from x to x plus delta x. Delta t is a time step. In general, if you think of J as being the flux, that's sort of the rate of transfer from this interval to the next interval over, then as the flux, as you would delta x and delta t go to zero in the appropriate way, actually it doesn't matter too much as far as this part's concerned, you get that the rate of change of density as a continuous variable should be negative space derivative of the flux. Okay, so for simple diffusion, fixed law type diffusion, physical diffusion, individuals move from one interval to the next, or the other way, at the same rate, independent of whether they're starting at x or x minus delta x, or they're starting between x and x plus delta x. So that means that the flux, you have a time scale, the flux has rate 1 over delta t, you have a fixed probability that just it depends on the mesoscale or macroscale variable x, but not on delta x. So you take the difference, you do some algebra, you get the usual diffusive term delta x squared over delta t, it's multiplying a fixed function of x, you go to diffusive scaling, where delta x squared over delta t is constant, and you get a diffusion coefficient that enters into the diffusion equation, as shown in the box at the bottom of the slide. So this is the form that, that Hastings looked at. It includes the Laplace operator, so that would be completely uniform isotropic diffusion, but it also includes the possibility that diffusion could depend on location, but only in a certain way. Okay, that's one possibility. Another possibility, suppose that the dispersal probability depends on the departure point, so you decide to go or not depending on what conditions are like where you are, irrespective of what conditions are like where you're going. If you think about things in that way, then the probability of movement now has the same dependency on location as the density you're looking at. And so that stays inside this difference when you do the algebra. And what that means is that you get, with diffusive scaling, a different form of the diffusion equation. So the flux now is the negative derivative of the entire quantity diffusion coefficient times density. And so you get the form that you see in the middle box, du dt equals d squared dx squared of the entire quantity dxu. This is also what you get by using Kolmogorov or Fokker-Planck type equations. So if you're thinking about modeling things from that point of view, this is the same thing that you would get. Okubo actually talks about a third possibility, which turns out to be relevant in some cases, which I'll come to later, which is, suppose that the probability of dispersing depends on the arrival patch. So you don't pay any attention to what's going on where you are, you just look at what's going on at your neighbor's, and if you think that's good enough, you go there. So now you have a different kind of dependence on location in terms of the probability of movement. After a little bit of algebra, you come up with a form where, again, you get a flux, it depends on location, but the associated diffusion now has the form in the lower box where you're taking the x derivative of a little more complicated quantity that involves the diffusion coefficient and the density. Now, the diffusion coefficient in all of these things means essentially the same thing. Every time you're thinking about scaling delta x squared over delta t times some probability or combination of probabilities, so that you get some finite limit. You get something that comes out to be a nice finite function. So this means essentially the same thing at the micro scale, but it comes in different ways at the larger scale because of the way that the probability of moving depends on location. So here it's sort of opposite to the case where it depends on the departure point. So what does that say about being able to achieve ideal free distributions? Well, there's one more piece, which is looking at a flux arising from advection. That one's simpler. Advection, as far as I know, is just advection. And you always just get d by dx of some factor that tells you the velocity, in effect, times density. So types of conditional dispersal might involve kinesis, which to me means that dx depends on environmental quality or density or some other thing like that, or taxis, which means that the advection rate depends on environment, density, or other things. And there's other terminology out there, but this is some terminology that I've seen used in that kind of a way. Mm-hmm. If someone wants to correct me on the biological use of the terminology, that would be fine. That's what I've heard. Okay, so I'm before going back to what mechanisms of diffusion can produce ideal free distributions, I want to talk about one that involves advection. And the reason why I'm thinking about this one as dynamic is this one makes sense without using population dynamics at all. It could be used perfectly well as a dispersal model for a fixed population. And it describes how organisms should move in a pretty much mechanistic way to achieve that, which is, it says, climb the local fitness gradient. Now, this means that the organisms have to be able to sense gradients in fitness, which is a combination of environment and density. So if you simply use that as an advection rate, and you plug into the formalism for advection diffusion, you get an equation that looks like this. It's got a diffusion type term that has some density dependence, which could be interpreted as avoidance of crowding, and an advection term that could be interpreted as climbing the gradient of the resource. This gives you a porous medium type degenerate diffusion equation, which means that you can have solutions that are zero in some places and positive in other places. If you don't have any population dynamics, and you look at a Lyapunov type functional, an energy functional, as people in parabolic theory would call it, and formally compute its derivative, but what you see is that you get a negative term and a term which might be positive or might be negative, depending upon the second derivative, convexity, of the resource distribution. If this energy functional has a negative derivative, then because of the way it's constructed, it forces either u or the gradient of m minus u to be zero. So that means where u is positive, then you get constant fitness with m minus u equal to zero. That's only going to be where u is non-zero, where if you've got a fixed population, won't be everywhere because the population has to, density has to integrate to some fixed number. So typically, if you have a graph of resource density that looks like what's in the picture at the bottom of the slide, then you get a graph of population density at equilibrium that just looked like that, shifted down by some amount to account for the fact that your population is finite. Now, a problem with this mathematically is because it's a degenerate diffusion equation, it's really hard to analyze. It doesn't behave as well in many respects mathematically as a straightforward Laplace-type equation. So I've got few rigorous results about this equation. If there are mathematicians who are interested in challenging problems in PDEs, I don't know how challenging it is, but this stuff is open, and it's probably at least moderately serious PDE theory in terms of sorting out existence, uniqueness, verifying that that energy functional that I wrote does what I claimed it does without just formal calculations, et cetera. So there's some math to be done there. What can be done rigorously without too much trouble, although it took quite a bit of work to do it, is to look at the situation with population dynamics. It's quickly observed that you would get an ideal free equilibrium out of it if you didn't have any extra diffusion terms. It's easily seen that m of u equals m of x will give you a nice equilibrium here. But now put in a little bit of diffusion and analyze this type of model. So if we add a little bit of diffusion, and this is work with Steve Cantrell, Yuan Liu, from a couple of years ago, we can get a decent existence uniqueness theory for this equation. If u equals zero is unstable, you get a positive equilibrium, and as the advection rate goes to infinity, or the diffusion rate goes to zero, with a few technical conditions, any positive equilibrium approaches the population growth rate. If the population growth rate changes sign, it approaches the positive part of the population growth rate. And so at least this model seems to be consistent in the limit with something that would give you an ideal free distribution from the limiting case, which is this degenerate equation. So there's plenty more to do in terms of analyzing this for evolutionary stability and other things. We haven't done it yet. Maybe we'll do that in the future. A mathematical challenge that arises there is the fact that this is a quasi-linear equation. You have nonlinear terms involved in the derivatives. Again, that gives a technical complication that you don't see if the dispersal terms are linear. So it's delayed progress just because of the mathematical technicalities. Okay, so now I want to talk about what kinds of things can give you equilibrium ideal free dispersal. And I think of it as equilibrium because I'm not thinking about a specific mechanism just yet that would achieve that. I want to go through a catalog of mechanisms and ask which ones do and don't have the capability of achieving it. So one point is that if you look at the fixed law type of diffusion that was considered by Hastings, you cannot achieve ideal free dispersal, generally speaking, unless you take the diffusion rate equal to zero. However, if you look at biodiffusion, where you pay attention to either the departure point or the arrival point in your decision to diffuse, then you get different forms of diffusion which do allow you to have ideal free dispersal. So if the diffusion rate depends on the departure point, then you can get an ideal free form of dispersal by taking the diffusion rate to be 1 over the local growth rate. So that says if things are good, don't move. If things are not so good, move. I got this after talking about this at a previous conference. Mark gave me a preprint where he'd worked this out as a possibility some time ago. A different possibility is that the diffusion rate depends on the arrival point. That gives you a more complicated form of diffusion, but even with that form, it turns out that you can still achieve an ideal free distribution. In that case, because of the way the diffusion coefficient depends on the population growth rate and enters into the diffusion term, it turns out that this new diffusion coefficient should look like the growth rate itself. However, note that it's occurring in a denominator still, but it's occurring in a numerator squared. So it's a little less clear how to interpret that. But roughly, it's going to say something like diffuse less quickly if things are good, more quickly if things are bad. A comment on that is that recently some colleagues from the University of Chile, Davila and Martinez, we were thinking about models that had non-local dispersal in continuous time. So this is like an integral difference model, but it's integral differential. Time is continuous, otherwise it's more or less the same thing. It turns out that in this kind of model, you can think k of xy represents transport from point y to point x. So y is the departure point, x is the arrival point. And in this kind of setup, you can explicitly talk about departure versus arrival. And it turns out that the strategies that give you an ideal free dispersal are those where you have a power of growth rate at the departure point, a power at the arrival point, and the power at the departure point is one less than the one at the arrival point. So that includes the pure departure case where you get 1 over m of y, and the pure arrival case where you get m of x, which is consistent with these microscale analyses of different types of diffusion. So even with a slightly different modeling viewpoint, these types of strategies in terms of departure and arrival points seem to continue to make sense in terms of giving you ideal free dispersal. I don't know how to mix these two together in the PDE case. Probably have to go back to the stochastic movement models and work up from there. So at this point, I'm just describing modeling. The key point, though, is that whether or not your population can achieve an ideal free dispersal pattern by using some type of diffusive movement depends on microscale aspects of the movement behavior. Now, another way that you can try to get at this, and this connects to the talk that Mark gave just prior to this, is to look at this first passage time analysis and just writing down without going through ignoring handling times, the type of model that produces for a predator you and prey in, assuming that you're getting a constant feed of prey into a location. So this would perhaps be something like dispersal coming from somewhere else. If you think that the prey is going to equilibrium quickly, then you can think about using the pseudo-equilibrium. And if you solve out for that and plug it back into the equation for the predator, you get a form that looks different from the logistic form, but has the same kind of features in terms of the way that the diffusion coefficient enters into the equation. And so if you think about what the predator equilibrium would be without dispersal, and it's this quantity here, alpha g over beta delta, and that means that if you rule these constants together, I give them the name d naught, so it would be beta delta over alpha, I think. So if d of x has this form, 1 over g of x, times the appropriate scale factor, depending on alpha, beta, and delta, again, you can achieve ideal free dispersal. So this also is something that I got from Mark. It's not in the paper, but it's a simple consequence of things that are there. So the point is that depending upon how you think your organisms are diffusing, they may be able to diffuse in such a way as to achieve ideal free dispersal. Now, another way that you could attempt to get it is by linear advection. And I'll return to that point in a few minutes. But we already saw that with nonlinear advection, you could get this type of thing. Okay, so I'm going to shift to a different but related topic. When can you get evolutionary stability out of this? Now, there are a number of different approaches that can be taken. For single species population models, work by Ross Kressman and by Crevan a couple of years ago shows that you get the ideal free distribution as evolutionarily stable. This is a sort of a top-down game theory type analysis. I'm interested in mechanisms, though, and so I want to do something that can incorporate the population dynamics and the dispersal mechanisms and all those things. So I'm going to take either a Hastings type approach or a McPeak-Holt-Dockery type approach, where you model both the resident and invader dynamics, or you at least model the invader dynamics. And in the Hastings approach, with various collaborators, been able to work out cases where you have discrete space and discrete diffusion and non-local dispersal, the type that I showed a slide or two ago in integral differential equations. In both of those cases, it's possible to see that ideal free dispersal is usually necessary and often sufficient for evolutionary stability. In some other models, it's been possible to use the slightly more complicated approach of modeling both resident and invader. And with linear advection and constant diffusion, ideal free dispersal can be seen to be locally evolutionarily stable relative to the choice of advection if the advection is chosen correctly. And I believe that Yuan Lo will say a little bit more about some of these things later in the conference. Okay, so discrete diffusion. What goes on there? Well, this is your typical discrete diffusion equation. I is supposed to represent the patch. Usual thing, look at equilibrium without dispersal. Ideal free dispersal means that you have no net movement at that equilibrium. Suppose you have a general equilibrium, and then you look at this system where you perturb off of the equilibrium with the invader, but just look at the invader's dynamics. Now, if you have an ideal free resident strategy and F prime, this growth rate derivative, is negative at that equilibrium, so it's an ecologically stable equilibrium, then you get stability for the zero state for the invader, and ideal free dispersal is evolutionarily stable by that criterion. And if you have a situation where the fitness is not identically equal to zero, then it has to change sign. And it's possible to construct a strategy that gives you instability at V equal to zero, so that invasion is possible. Now, a problem with this is that it's not clear whether the strategy is a natural one, because using the discrete diffusion makes it a little bit hard to incorporate mechanisms. So that is a limitation of the approach, as far as I understand it. But it does suggest that this is the right direction to take. An important observation here is that if you try to use linearized stability at an equilibrium which has the ideal free property, you look at the linear stability equation for V equal to zero in this setup, the terms involving the population growth rate disappear. Those are zero at ideal free equilibrium. Furthermore, if you use a bit of matrix theory on the dispersal matrix, it turns out that that thing can be seen to have a zero principal eigenvalue, which means that you get neutral stability of the invasion stability model. And that means some type of nonlinear analysis is needed. In the ODE case, you can use the Lyapunov functions. In the case of non-local dispersal from integral kernels, you can use something fairly close to that. That general method still works. In the case of reaction diffusion, it's not so clear whether you can make sense out of that. Roughly speaking, the problem is that you can use Lyapunov-type functions to get an L1 bound on things, but those that are knowledgeable about parabolic PDE realize that an L1 bound doesn't get you very much. You can still have things blowing up in finite time and doing all kinds of bad things, even in the presence of such a bound. So technically, those methods don't carry over in a simple way to PDEs. Okay, so now looking at a case where we can do something with PDEs, and this is still, I guess this one's been accepted, but it hasn't appeared yet. This is, again, joint work with Steve Cantrell, Yuan Liu. We looked at this type of a situation where you have constant equal diffusions, possibly different advections, and looked at the case where the advection was related in some way to the growth rate. It turns out for this one, if you take advection not up the gradient of the growth rate itself, the log of the growth rate, then this will support ideal free equilibrium. So what that means is if you calculate the gradient, it's going to be the gradient of m divided by m. So what that means biologically is you want to crawl up the growth rate of the gradient, but you want to do it at a rate that's slower where the growth rate's big and faster where the growth rate's small. In any case, that means that you can achieve ideal free distribution through advection, linear advection, if you choose it in the right way. So we've got a couple of theorems on this. One is that if you perturb away from this particular choice of the advection term, then you have stability for the resident, instability, you have neutral stability for the resident at the linear level, but you have global asymptotic stability at the nonlinear level. This requires some complicated nonlinear analysis, but it works. You always get instability, even at the linear level, so that the guy that has the ideal free dispersal can invade the other guy. And some competition theory shows that in this case you can actually go up to global asymptotic stability for the resident, because you can rule out for small epsilon the existence of intermediate equilibria. And then competition theory based on monotonicity gives you the rest of it. It's also the case that if your resident is using some non-constant variant on this advection term, log of the growth rate, then there's some strategy that can invade. So this basically says that you have the evolutionary stability. So the techniques that are involved are eigenvalue estimates, the Oppenheim-Schmidt analysis of equilibria, and the theory of monotone dynamical systems. So there's quite a bit of math that goes into this, but that's the conclusion. Now, this is within this, all these stability analyses, I want to point out, are within a restricted class of strategies. All you can do is choose how you advect. So this is not within a very general class of strategies. A different result, this one works only in one space dimension, and Yuan has told me that it's by simulation or at least numerical computation, it's not necessarily true, even in one dimension, if you remove a monotonicity assumption. But suppose that you think about perturbing your ideal free dispersal strategy by some other strategy to either a greater or lesser amount, as reflected by parameters alpha and beta, and the thing you perturb by is monotone. So either it's increasing or decreasing. So it turns out that if you perturb one of the advection terms one direction, the other one in the other direction, then you get coexistence. However, if you perturb both of them in the same direction, that is, you give both of them either a positive or negative multiple of this perturbation, then strategy that's closer to being ideal free, where the coefficient is closer to zero, will be favored in the sense that the competitor with that strategy will have a stable equilibrium, the other one will have an unstable equilibrium. So the selection for a strategy is closer to the ideal free strategy, which is what some of the adaptive dynamics people call convergent stability. In any case, the strategy of advecting along the log of the growth rate gives you an ideal free equilibrium that's evolutionarily stable in a pretty robust sense. So one thing that we liked about this analysis is that we were able to do it. We were actually able to pin down precisely these parameter values that do and don't give you evolutionary stability or convergent stability and relate those back to the mechanisms. Okay, so to wrap things up in the big picture, there are a number of different things that organisms can try to do in terms of moving around at that micro scale. You do simple diffusion. That gives you a dispersal term that looks like fixed law type diffusion, physical diffusion. And dispersal of that type does not allow you to get an ideal free distribution. And typically, at the evolutionary scale, that gives you something where you have evolutionarily unstable strategies, and you come up with selection for slow dispersal. And this is essentially Hastings' result back in 1983. If you have nonlinear advection, no real diffusion in there, just advection, depending on density and resources, you can achieve ideal free distribution. We haven't tried to figure out what happens in terms of evolutionarily stable strategies there. That one has challenges due to the fact that this will give you a degenerate and quasi-linear diffusion equation. Looking at simple diffusion with linear advection, you can get an IFD by choosing advection rate correctly. And at least in some cases, you get evolutionary stability for that kind of strategy. If you look at diffusion where the movement rate is based on departure point at the microscale, you get a diffusion equation of a slightly different form. And you can achieve ideal free distributions with the right choice of diffusion coefficients. I don't know if you get evolutionary stability in that case. I haven't tried to work it out yet. Similarly, if the movement depends only on the arrival point, you get a different form and a different choice of diffusion coefficient, but again, you can achieve an ideal free distribution. And again, I don't know whether that gives you evolutionary stability or not. There are a lot of other possible things that organisms could do in terms of moving around, and in terms of a lot of different things ecologists could do in the way of modeling how organisms move around. And so there's plenty more to think about in terms of what might be going on in the movement mechanisms. And figuring out what's possible and what kind of property solutions to advection reaction diffusion equations you might get. There are a lot of technical problems in PDEs, and that's why we haven't figured these things out yet. It's not necessarily simple. Finally, there are questions about evolutionary stability if you broaden the class of strategies. The cases where we can show that something is or isn't evolutionarily stable are only fairly specific kinds of dispersal mechanisms and only fairly specific kinds of strategies. And so it would be of interest to be able to say something more general. But to say something more general, we have to understand what's going on with these other kinds of diffusions and with nonlinear advection and various other mechanisms that might be present. So that's where, on the mathematical side, I see a lot of opportunities to do some analysis and pull all of these things together. Ultimately, it would be desirable to look at this in a multitrophic context. I want to go back briefly to the discrete diffusion case. Those results extend to multi-species models, competition or predator-prey. But they only extend to the equilibrium case. So if you have something in predator-prey that gives you cycles, none of it's true anymore. Also, for predator-prey models, the analysis seems to require some type of self-limitation on the predator. So you either need a logistic depth term or predator interference in the functional response or something to make the analysis work in the predator-prey case for the approach that we took. There are other approaches to predator-prey in maybe a little more restricted setting, but other approaches where you don't necessarily need those assumptions. However, both the analysis and the formulation of the models highlight the fact that something different happens if you've got cycles, something different happens if you've got time dependence. That requires another whole line of thought. And I'll stop there.